Jackson is being interviewed by Renee Garrelick for Concord's Oral History Program. The program is sponsored by the Concord Historical Commission. The interview is being held at the townhouse. Mr. Clarkson, who is 62 years old and formerly lived at 99 Main Street, has now moved to Rockport. Today is May 5th, 1986. Mr. Clarkson, your family on your mother's side goes back quite a bit in Concord's history.
Yeah, supposedly it goes all the way back to Peter Bulkley at least, and somebody said something at one time about William Wood, but apparently it was only rumored that he had been to this area. But I know we are connected with the Wood family, but that, I believe, came along later. But my mother always claimed some kind of connection with Peter Bulkley.
Mm-hmm. Now, on her, on your mother's side, your great aunt was a butcher?
Yes. My grandmother was Bessie Brooks, Caroline Elizabeth Brooks, known as Bessie Brooks, and her adoptive sister was Mary Brooks, known as Mady, and we always called her Aunt Mady. That was the family of Judge Brooks, sometimes called Squire Brooks, and they lived on Hubbard Street, and later on in the home now occupied by Harry Lang on, I believe it's 1 Sudbury Road.
Mm-hmm. And you used to visit the Buttricks at their Liberty Street?
Well, she was alone in the world by the time I became conscious of things. Her husband had died several years previously to my... No, he must have died shortly after I was born. But she was alone, and she was quite wealthy, and had a home up on Liberty Street. It's a big yellow farmhouse, formerly the Derby Farm. You can see the well cover near the path to her front door with a D on it, which was Derby Farm. And we used to go up there at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. The whole family, all she could get hold of. We've had as many as 14 or 15 people up there.
Mm-hmm.
On Christmas. Yes, and those Christmases are very, very precious to my memory, believe me.
Mm-hmm. And your mother's name was?
My mother was Elizabeth Brooks Cutter, and she had two sisters, Rosemary Cutter and Gretchen Cutter. Gretchen died in childbirth in 1929. My Aunt Rosemary was a constant part of our family all my life.
Mm-hmm. And your mother was very aware of her background?
Yes, very much so. She was a very socially conscious person. I don't think my aunt cared a hoot about it, and I know my dad did. My dad's family all came from Newburyport.
What was your father's name?
My father's name was John Wheeler Clarkson.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, where I'm living now in Rockport is where my parents met.
Right.
They met at the Rockport Country Club, my mother used to say, on the tennis court. And that's the way they got to know each other.
Was it important, what church did you
We went to the Unitarian Church, and the Congregational Church and the Episcopal Church were the three most important churches in town when I was growing up.
And was this a sort of question that your mother would care about if you brought friends?
Yes, I was told early on, particularly when I began to go to public school second grade, that it'd be nice if I would ask the boys before I brought them home what church they went to, and then I could tell her what church they went to. I'm very much afraid if they went to the Catholic Church, she wasn't too much in favor of my associating with them, although she later on modified that a bit. She got to know one of my dear friends, Paul D., and she liked Paul very much, and so that kind of changed her.
Was Concord a class divided society?
It was divided in many ways. Certainly there were perhaps four or five different levels. You had the bottom of the heap, you had the Italians who had arrived last, and who lived down on Bedford Court, mostly the Rizzitanos. There were 20 children in that family. They were kind of rough and ready. And then others were up behind the depot, the other side of the tracks, unquote. Then the next in line were the Irish, who were beginning to, at this point in the 30s, be assimilated into the, you might call, the middle and upper levels of convict living. Then there was the large middle class group, and even there you would have an upper and a middle and a lower, and then the truly upper class, and there was an upper too, and this was determined mostly by money.
What if you lived in West Concord?
Well, if you lived in West Concord, as far as my mother was concerned, you were beyond the pale. Even though there were so many fine families up there, notably people like the Damons, who I got to know later on. And my mother knew my friend Dick Damon's father and his uncles, but there was no socializing.
Can you give me an example of some of the wealthy families that you know?
The really high-powered ones. Well, the one that was always at the top of my list was the Burke Stevens family, they represented pretty much the top of the heap.
They lived on Lower Road.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I guess Burke Stevens has since died. I hardly knew him. But there were others as time went on. Prominent ones were people like the Shaws, the Edgertons, and I knew Henry Edgerton very well. Fine young man, you never want to meet. I called him a good friend of mine. The Lunt, certainly Dr. Lunt, and the Emerson family. Although, again, Billy Emerson, we knew each other, and we could greet and we could talk. Those were the you might call them the high powered ones. And later along came families like Moores. Bob Moore had just recently died, and yet his wife and my mother were quite good friends. But again, there was no social life.
The Kidders were also?
Oh yes, the Kidders and the Feenies and so forth were all part of that group. They lived either on the Shorter Hill or in the park, as we call the area of Crescent Road.
Mm-hmm. Who were the children that you played with?
Well, my closest friends, as time went on, became to be such people as Walter Borden Jr., Donald Ferber, my own cousin, John Wood, and various others, Henry Thurlow, Teddy Daniels,
they were ministers.
Woody Blocker. Teddy Daniels and Henry Thurlow were ministers' children. And we had a group that kind of stuck together at high school, and we had members of the other areas too. I mean, for instance, John Antononi, who came from Elsinore Street, was a part of our group for some time. He eventually married into the Andy Boy Broccoli family, and then died in some bad troubles.
But these were not the high status
I never even thought about it. After some initial struggles with my mother, who would have much rather had me socialize with the Foss children, or the Kidders, or whatever, and I knew these people. I could, meet them and talk to them, but mm-hmm. I didn't want to compete socially.
Mm-hmm. And you wanted to choose your own friends.
And I wanted very much to choose my own friends, which I finally did, and she finally gave up on it after a while.
Were your parents country club people?
Yes, they belonged to the Concord Country Club for many years. They did not After a certain point, they dropped their membership as they got older. But my dad loved to play golf, and he and Walter Boyd constantly played golf through the 30s. My dad would come home from work, and without even having supper, would grab his golf clubs and go up to the country club.
What did he do for a living?
He worked for the Hood Goodrich Rubber Company in Watertown for well over 40 years.
Now, certain family names, would they seem to appear over and over on committees or
yes.
organizations?
Oh, yes. You had the hard workers, people like Burley Pratt, people like D. Ripley Gage. The Concord Players was a fine organization in town at the time. And it's only within the last 20 years, 20, 25 years, that they've become really, really democratic. I used to go to the Concord Players presentations every year when it was deemed a suitable play, and it always was. It was never anything. I think the most risque one they ever put on was the Petrified Forest. There was a lot of cussing in the first scene, and they had to modify it in a kind of later performances after the first night. But there were always the leaders, the Wheeler family, Leslie Anderson was always in there pitching hard, and the same names appeared again and again and again in the write-ups of these things in the papers.
Was Kies and
Bob? Oh yeah, Kies, and that was a prominent, socially prominent family. I never knew Mr. Kies, but I guess Mrs. Kies did a lot. And of course the Robs. Nobody in this town will ever know how many young people Mrs. Russell Robs Sr., that is, Colonel Rusty Robs' grandmother, sent to college and paid for herself. That was the kind of thing, you know, even today, the fund for the less fortunate members of the Unitarian Church is called the Fund for the Silent Poor, and nothing is ever said about this kind of thing. It was all done very quietly, and it was so in those days, too. Yes.
And which branch of the
Kies
family do you have more?
Well, I knew Danny, and I knew the girl he married. The girl he married was Barbara Richardson, who was very much a part of our small group, and her dad, Laurie, had been a beau of my mother's way back. In fact, I have a beautiful picture of my mother and Laurie Richardson dancing at my daughter's wedding back in a few years ago. They were quite a steady thing for a while, I guess.
Now, at the eighth grade, was that time when you began to divide?
Oh, yes.
Seventh
or eighth grade, I forgot which, but that was the time of the junior socialists. If you were on the right list, you got an invitation. I remember we had a fellow in my class whose mother had a great deal to do with making up that list, so it was, if you didn't feel it, if you felt that somebody wasn't on there that belonged, you might slip a word and get him put on the list or something like that. That was sort of the beginning of, I suppose you'd call it true, social consciousness. The junior sociables were held, I believe, four times a winter, during the winter, and were held at the Scout House. And it was the first brush we had with formal social behavior. That is, the boys wore tuxedos, the girls wore long dresses, and there were dinners given before the dances. Of course, there was a certain amount of prestige as to whose dinner you got asked to, I kind of enjoyed the junior social, because we had a gentleman who ran them by the name of Joseph Champagne, and he'd always start things off with 1, 2, 3, are you ready, let's go. Mm-hmm. The music would start and off we'd go. And he would teach a little bit of dancing each time, too, I remember.
Such a thing as the senior?
Oh, there was indeed. That came along later when you were oh, 16, 17 years old, you started getting invited to the senior socials. They seemed to be mostly comprised of private school boys, that is, people from Middlesex, Brown Nichols, Milton Academy, some of whom I knew and some of whom I did not know, and they were usually held at the Dunkard Country Club. I went to one and found it so distasteful in its stiff formality that I pulled out halfway through the evening, and that was the end of that. Mm. I never went to another one.
Was the division between private and public school apparent?
It became marked, yes. It became marked as you got older. You see, we had the three private schools here in Minconk. You had the Fenton School for the younger boys. You had Academy for Girls, and you had Middlesex for the boys, and some of the boys later on went further afield. Some boys that I knew went all the way through school, and school, for instance, Billy Emerson, as I say, went to the Penn School, but we still knew him. Larry Lunt went to the Penn School all the way through. Some of my friends, like Don Kerber, went up to a certain level and then came to public school and then went away again. He and Walter Borden went to Exeter. Others went to places like Andover and Governor Dummer, you name it. I myself left the end of my junior year, left Concord High School, and went to Stanton Military Academy down in the down in Virginia.
Was the attitude, even during the Depression, that if you could afford to send your child to a private school, that's what?
This was prestigious. Yeah, it was done not only for the welfare of the child, but for the social welfare of the parents, I always felt.
Now, you mentioned the Irish were beginning to achieve a certain amount of recognition. This is getting towards the time of World War II.
Right, right. And for instance, my paragons among this group are the D family. And, of course, Charlie Dee's family, the funeral director, his grandfather, or great-grandfather, established that firm. And there's a tremendous respect in this town for Charlie Dee and his family. Well, the father of my friend Paul was a postman. His name was Bill Dee. And as time went on, particularly with the influence of the war. Now, several of Paul's brothers were in the service, and Paul was born in. They were officers. Now, the prestige of being an officer did something for them, see, as far as the town went, and as far as their own feeling about themselves went, I'm sure. I was not an officer. But many of my friends were. I sound like an awful pedant here, but... I think there was something to that. You know, if the kid from the other side of the tracks can come out of the war wearing oak leaves or an eagle, he's done something. You know, and that's a big accomplishment, and that's exactly what it was. And I think since World War II, Concord has been a much more democratic sort of town than it was before. Mm. This has been my experience.
Did you know any Jewish families?
There was one Jewish family in town that had children. There were two Jewish gentlemen. They were brothers. Their name was Harkin. They were both tailors. And Sam and Max had shops on the opposite side of Main Street, opposite sides. And the rumor was they didn't speak to each other for years and years and years and years. I don't know why. I don't know whether that's even true or not. Natty Arkin was my contemporary, and I was friendly with Natty. I knew him quite well. My mother occasionally had served on committees with Mrs. Arkin, and everybody who ever met Sam loved him dearly. He was a fine, fine fellow, and he had a tremendous sense of humor. Lenny Arkin, who was my brother's contemporary, is one of my brother's closest and oldest friends, even though he no longer lives in Concord. And those were the only Jewish families I knew when I was growing up here in Concord. I was influenced by anti-Semitism on part of certain of my relatives. And when I got down to Stanton, I knew Jewish boys and always got along with them fine. Later on in life, well, I've been to so many parties where my wife and I were the only nominal Christians in the whole room.
Did you go to school with any black family?
There was one black girl in high school when I went there. She came from Lincoln, and she was a lovely little girl, and I know all the kids liked her and all that, but she was the petunia in the onion patch, I'd say, offhand, to turn around an old saying. And it wasn't helped by certain of the teachers who would kid her a little bit about being black and refer to her as Miss Sunset or Miss Nightshade or something like that. This was done. And I think it was a common thing at the time, particularly where you had a minority of one. I'm sure if 90% of those kids were black, these people would keep their mouths shut. They certainly would keep their mouths shut today.
Now, did the other children laugh?
Oh, yeah, they responded to it to some degree. But I think even then they felt that this particular faculty member was being a little, was going a little far.
Now, the temperance union against drinking used to be quite active in Concord, and I'm sure growing up in the 30s you weren't that far away from the Prohibition days.
I well remember Prohibition days. I remember when Prohibition was declared null and void, and in fact it was one of the factors in the town that helped divide the social groups. Many friends of my parents did not drink. My parents did, and the crowd they went with did. And there were drinks at all their parties, and there was always liquor in our house. But it would naturally, if somebody was a teetotaler, you realized that he might be uncomfortable at your house at a party, so you didn't invite him. And he understood why, and you understood why you weren't invited to their parties. And several of my parents' friends were just non-drinkers, and each sort of respected the other person's feelings on it, and that's all there was to it. But it did provide some kind of a division socially, you see. And it was there. For instance, you spoke about Stan Howard earlier. I don't believe his parents drank. And I mentioned Seep Short, his parents. And there were others whom I knew that my parents knew them, but because of this particular taste in social life, there wasn't the socializing that otherwise would have occurred.
Did people have liquor that you were aware of during the Prohibition days?
Oh, sure. Oh, yes.
There were
bootleggers around. I was far too young. After all, I was born in 1923. I was far too young to be so sophisticated in my knowledge, but I knew what a bootlegger was, and I knew what a speakeasy was. And I know that, as far as I was concerned, all the bootleggers lived in Boston or Cambridge. There weren't any bootleggers in Concord, but I'm very sure I'm wrong on that.
I see. Now, after... when you reached adult age, you taught at the Fenn School?
Taught for 2 years. My wife and I taught for 2 years at the Fenn School, and then moved out to New York State, and then down to New Jersey, and then back out to New York State again. And then, our marriage broke up, and I came on to this part of the country, and I lived here ever since.
Great. Well, thank you.